Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This past week saw the city of Chicago choose a new mayor, the Chicago City Council get a new look and maybe a new swagger, and some suburban races were decided as well. This weekend, we take stock with two of the best analysts around. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guests this week are two politically astute women whom you've heard before. WBBM political analyst Robin Robinson sat by my side during our truly dynamic election coverage last Tuesday night. She's best known as a past reporter and anchor for Fox 32 and CBS 2 here in Chicago, and she's also a political consultant. Erin Hegarty covers government and politics for the Daily Line, the digital news source, and she helped us unpack round one's election results on this very program just a matter of weeks ago. And as I mentioned then, I will again, she sits right next to me, and that's why I always sound like I know what I'm talking about. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much, Greg. Good to be back with you so soon.
Happy to be here.
Well, we should probably start by looking at Brandon Johnson's victory over the more experienced and better funded Paul Vallis. Robin Robinson, Johnson didn't win the Southwest and Northwest sides, but he seemed to either win or do well enough in most other places. How much of a surprise was this?
Well, I don't know. If you think about the fact that the outgoing Mayor Lightfoot, that's where she did well. Where she did well, he did well. And I don't think that's that surprising. But the North Lakefront support, I think it all speaks to a mistrust of Vallis's Democratic credentials, right? He's not. They keep calling him the moderate and Brandon the progressive. I'm not sure that those are the two ends of the stick, right? If you're progressive, you can't be moderate, and if you're not progressive, you are moderate. Because I mean, a lot of people think he's really that Vallis is really right. Right wing. And there was that suspicion, you know, and I think that is what, you know, that's what turned people off. They just didn't believe that because you had to say it at the top of every commercial, lifelong Democrat Paul Vallis. I think that they just didn't trust it and went for Brandon Johnson. I think it was a different kind of voting pattern a little bit. You know, there was some crossover and, you know, people voting collective interests and not just their own individual interests. So I think it was a very telling outcome.
Erin Hegarty, what struck you about Johnson's win in the wards and the kinds of wards where he won?
I don't know. I think what struck me more kind of on election night was the speed at which everything happened. I don't know. It was an exciting mayoral race, and it was nice to like not have, you know, unlike in February, 9 people who you're trying to watch the results of. But I don't know. It was so interesting to see Johnson kind of slowly creep up. I know, you know, all the ballots came in at the same time, but to watch him slowly creep up, and then I was very surprised. Kind of how early Paul Vallis conceded. That was my big kind of surprise of the night, just because it was early, it was short, it was quick. And even, you know, it seemed like, you know, I wasn't there, but I was watching on TV his speech, and it seemed like some of his supporters kind of groaned when he said he fully expects Brandon Johnson to be the next mayor of Chicago. Yeah, that was the most surprising thing all night for me. And it did happen, I think, before 10. It was like between nine, a little after 9:30.
We're getting used to that quick count. You know, props to the Chicago Board of Elections, and as I'm fond of also adding, because they use the same equipment, Cook County is also counting quicker than it used to. One thing that struck me is the North Lakefront. Yes, we expected some of that to do well, but that was also where Vallis was hoping and planning, I think, to make inroads. You had Tom Tunney endorsing Vallis, and Vallis won the 44th ward, but just barely. It was almost a tie. I think that and you know, 42 was not all that. I mean, I think that it seemed as if Vallis didn't do as well in the places where he really expected to do well.
And Tom Tunney was out like on the campaign trail and hosting events for Paul Vallis, like literally leading right up to the election. And so, yeah, I wonder, looking back now, like how much, you know, endorsements or the support of an alderman actually mean. And, you know, what was this also? I mean, you know, he's retiring, but was this also a referendum on Tom Tunney? And does he, you know, support the same person who his constituents supported?
You know, and Robin, let's get you in on this too, because we do want to definitely talk about endorsements. Obviously a mixed bag. I'm sure Jesse White probably helped Vallis. I am sure Chuy Garcia, the congressman's endorsement, probably helped Johnson. But I wonder if most people don't shrug them off. And you have to wonder about when aldermen, especially the ones who are going to still be around, start endorsing people. Are they making bets? And if so, who won and who lost, Robin?
Well, it depends. I mean, some people, if you're really trying to be credible, right, you endorse the person you actually think will do the best job, not the person you think will win. Politics would say endorse the person who will win. Hopefully we have, you know, public servants and not just politicians. And the nice thing about this race is nobody could really say who was going to win. So you couldn't, and as a person doing the endorsing, right, you weren't going to win. Half the people were going to be mad at you, right? And they were going to say, oh, you must have been promised a job. Well, let's be clear. Both candidates were promising everybody everything to get endorsements, right? So you were going to get one either way. And if all you're interested in was that, then you would try to pick whoever you thought was going to win. But if you actually went with what you knew, you know, I thought the interesting thing was that people endorsed in a surprising way, right? I think people were surprised. Look at, we had nine candidates in the general election. You know, two made it to the runoff, and all but two of the rest of them, which were all Black, went for Paul Vallis. That was, you know, Jamal Cole, Roderick Sawyer, Sophia King, basically, I mean, the whole crew except Cam Buckner and Lori Lightfoot and Chuy Garcia. So, and that kind of says something, because they all, obviously, they were Black candidates who wanted to see a Black mayor. They wanted it to be them, but they also all wanted to see a Black mayor. But that wasn't enough to assuage their concerns about Brandon Johnson.
Yeah, and I wonder about people like, for example, Anthony Beale in the Ninth Ward. Mm-hmm. Now that had to be kind of a risk there, because far south side ward, he is the second in seniority in the city council, has never had a committee chairmanship, feels very badly about that, throws in with Paul Vallis, and not only doesn't Vallis not win, but his ward went by what, a 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 margin for Johnson. So
Anthony Beale, you know, you say what a risk. That's all he does is take risks. I mean, he's not, you know, he's the kid in second grade that didn't play well with others. He's, you know, he hasn't had a committee chairmanship. for a reason. I happen to think that, you know, he's heart and soul into his ward down there in Roseland. But I just think that perhaps he's not as political of an animal as he should be if he wanted to be more successful, right? Play the game a little better. I think he went with Starr.
Yeah. So the question is, what do these aldermen do now? I mean, now that the dust is settling, and it's not completely settled in a couple of races, now that it's settling, you know, how do they make up the, you know, once upon a time, you would just, everybody would shrug off and say, well, all right, that was the election, and now we're all back to normal. But the attitudes, it seems, in the city council, and the city for that matter, have been that people hold grudges longer.
In the country.
that is true. That is true. But is that one of the challenges you see going forward, Erin?
Yeah, I think, you know, people will probably still hold grudges. I don't know, you know, aldermen or the mayor-elect, you know, I do think it would be a pretty strong stance to take to, you know, come in as the new mayor and hold grudges against aldermen who didn't support you. But I think one thing that's different is we saw, what, last week or 2 weeks ago, aldermen vote on, they've already established their committee chairmanships. And that's something where if you're a new mayor and you're going to hold a grudge against people who didn't vote for you, that's the first step in demonstrating that grudge, is not giving someone a committee chairmanship. And these are mostly already set. I think, you know, there's still room for the mayor to try to make some movements or move people around in their chairmanships. But I think that getting those chairmanships set before the new mayor comes in leaves less room to, you know, show that you're holding a grudge right out the gate.
Who wants people holding a grudge anyway? Can we just all grow up?
As a Chicagoan, as a voter, like, please just do the work of the people. I care about the drama because I'm a reporter and I observe it. But as a voter, please just, you know, do the work.
And we'd like to see that, but let's face it, even over the last 4 years, that has been one of the problems, whether it be between Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle over on the county side, or some people within the council for a while.
Most people within the council claim that she did not include them in the decision-making process. And I think that was her downfall. And I hopefully Mayor-elect Johnson will learn from that, because that is the biggest dig on Lori Lightfoot, is that she, you know, ruled as opposed to leading. And, you know, things come out of the blue, and they've been talking, they talked about NASCAR for a year before the aldermen whose wards are going to be impacted, even though the whole city is going to be impacted, knew anything about it. That's not collective empowerment. I know I keep using that word, but I believe in the collective. So,
and we're going to have some challenges like that coming up, but, we should probably talk about the fact that crime is going to be probably job one, but it's not a job that can be easily done. And, I'm wondering what the council and the mayor can do to demonstrate to the public that that's our top priority, when you can't wave a magic wand. I am not hearing any solid ideas beyond, well, let's see what the mayor has to say.
Well, I think, you know, you made a good point. No one can wave a magic wand. The mayor, the city council, the police department itself, whoever is the next superintendent. But I think, you know, there's gonna have to be some package of, I'm taking action on this thing immediately. I'm taking some steps, but also longer term investments or plans. And yeah, I'm very interested to see who is chosen, who is picked as the new CPD superintendent, and how the mayor and the city council work with that person, because that'll be, you know, crucial as well.
Right. I think what you're going to see is not first police and then the rest. What Brandon Johnson has promised is first the rest, right? In other words, first we're going to get to the root causes, have some long-term solutions that policing is, and we all do it. When we say, we talk about public safety and crime, the first thing we say is CPD. When, you know, that's kind of like the outcome of the pipeline, right? But the input is, you know, poor education, poor mental health, poor everything in the areas where, you know, most of the harmful behavior is grown. I mean, it's systemic, historic, not just disinvestment, but, you know, really targeting communities. And I believe Brandon Johnson has been very vocal about this, that we are not, you know, we can't, and every superintendent has said we can't arrest our way out of this, but then when we can't solve it, we proceed to try to arrest our way out of it, right? So it's the definition of insanity. But it's going to be hard, right? Because people want safety now. And when you start talking about root causes, you're talking about, you know, maybe in 5 or 10 years, things will look better. But hey, it took us 400 years to get here. So yes. I think the police superintendent choice is going to be tough, because it's going to have to be somebody who is on board with that. But Mayor-elect Johnson doesn't get to have that choice on his own. I'm interested in this process with the commission and the councils. And how that's going to work, where they present the commission, I guess, presents three candidates to the mayor. The mayor can dismiss all of them. The mayor can also have input on, you know, who they're looking at. So I don't know, you know, how community empowering it's going to be. But I think that'll be important, but it certainly won't be the only thing. And I don't think that Johnson is going to make that the most important part of his safety plan. Mm-hmm. And he was asked yesterday about those 1,600 vacancies. He completely blew that question off.
Well, he actually, though, to be honest, he blew all of the questions off on policy. and he pretty much acknowledged that, because when he was asked any policy questions yesterday after meeting with the mayor, he said, "We're uniting the city today."
Right.
Yeah. So it's basically, I'm not saying anything that people are going to take sides on.
That's all right. He's got plenty of time to say plenty of things.
And it will definitely happen. You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I am Craig Delamore. We are talking about the elections week that was, with WBBM political analyst Robin Robinson and Aaron Hegarty of The Daily Line. Let's talk a little bit more about the city council. I was going to talk about turnout, but if we have to, we'll talk about it a little later, because we're going to be talking about turnout for years. Let's look at some of those wards. I will admit, and Aaron, this question's for you, because I know you, if anybody knows the answer, you do.
Oh,
29th
no.
Ward. Why was Public Safety Committee Chairman Chris Taliaferro's race such a nail biter? I mean, has he angered some West Side folks for some reason? I mean, I know CB Johnson is a well-known drug recovery activist. He's a businessman, but I mean, what was going on in that race that not only did he not go, you know, clear a runoff, but also that race was still really tight?
You've stumped me. I don't actually know the answer to that question, because it's so close, and it's the closest, I think, maybe I'm making a wrong claim here, but it's the closest incumbent race that I'm watching right
maybe
now.
Maybe Timmy Knudsen is another one.
As well. Well, yeah, I think Timmy Knudsen is now like 600 votes ahead, but Chris Taliaferro is under 300 votes ahead of his challenger, CB Johnson.
Wow.
And I think, you know, I don't live in the 29th ward, but Chris Taliaferro seems to be a pretty well-respected member of the city council, and he is the head of the public safety committee. And he's been, you know, in office. He's not, you know, a new freshman alderman. I don't know. I do wonder if, you know, he made a bid, I think last year at this point, for a judgeship, and he lost that race. So I don't know if people look at that and make a decision on how to vote based on how he did in a different election. You know,
he tried to get out of the job he has and maybe doesn't want it.
Yeah, but that race is very perplexing to me. And I expected, I was surprised that he didn't win outright in February. And now I'm surprised about how close this race is, with still, 950 outstanding mail-in ballots in the 29th ward. So I'm watching it very closely because he is slated already to hold his chairmanship of the Public Safety Committee. So if he doesn't win, we're going
to
see
a huge committee chairmanship to have to fill.
It is. And we're going to see a new public safety chair if he doesn't win. And that could really determine what legislation is heard, how quickly legislation gets passed out of that committee.
Robin?
I think that there's a almost, we talk about the power of incumbency. There's also the burden of incumbency. You have a record. You have had enough time to have made some people mad. You have, something that people can point to. And when a new, look, I'm new, I'm fresh, I got great ideas, and I'm with you. I've been doing stuff in the community. That sounds good to people. You know what I'm saying? I think that sometimes there is a double-edged sword to being an incumbent. You do have a record to run on and for people to poke at. And being the head of the Public Safety Committee, that requires you to, have a relationship with police as well as community who may have some feelings about police, right? So I think that that's a tough road. I think it's fascinating that race is that close. But the West Side, they got a lot of pride. And when they decide they want to do something different, they are activists.
Amen. The 11th ward is another race that I found fascinating. And this is where Nicole Lee became by appointment the first Chinese American representative on the city council. She is, I am fond of pointing out, the second Asian, because Amaya Pawar on the north side was the first, but she is the first of Chinese descent. And we're also getting a Filipino on the city council. So there will now be two Asians in the city council. But she, like other Lori Lightfoot appointees, didn't clear the threshold of 50% plus one vote to avoid a runoff, but she won handily in round two. And she seemed to mesh with the council faster and better than most of the freshmen I've seen over the last number of years. That was another. She was running against a police officer and had it was still a closer race than you might have expected it to be. What dynamics were you seeing there?
I thought she was gonna win outright in February, but I think maybe there were a lot of I don't remember how many candidates there were in that race, but I do wonder if the number of people who are running kind of split the vote. And then when given the choice between Nicole Lee, incumbent, but not like quite as you mentioned, just appointed, that they went with Nicole Lee. I think it was interesting that you saw the Daley family come out and support her. And I don't know, like, did that help? Did that hurt? I'm sure, some people looked at that and saw she supported, by the Daleys. I don't want, old politics in Chicago anymore. But then other, people might have seen the Daley support and said, okay, she's got their endorsement. I'm going to vote for her. But I also agree with that. She meshed with city council. I mean, she seemed like an incumbent. She seemed like she was on city council, for years by her first or second meeting.
Nice.
Yeah, no, she if she survives this, which she did, she seems like she'll be around a while. And she seemed to get the team, the team spirit quite quickly. And we did mention briefly in the 43rd ward is where Alderman Timmy Knudsen has been, and then thank you for that update with the mail ballots coming in. He's 600 votes ahead of Sheffield Neighborhood Association President Brian Comer. But that's, again, still another one that's dependent on mail ballots before we really know who's gonna do it. 21st Ward, replacing Howard Brookins, organizer and political consultant Ronnie Mosley wins over retired firefighter Cornell Dantzler. That was another race that we were watching. Howard Brookins, another person that we didn't quite expect to retire, who did. And you see any signs in that ward either, Erin?
I don't know. I think we expected Mosley to win. I don't know if he had, I don't remember if Brookins endorsed him, but he seemed like he had the most.
Brookins had someone that he was endorsing, and he was taking him around to different events ahead of the general. I don't remember who it was, and I can't seem to find, you know, who did Howard Brookins endorse. But I don't think it was Ronnie Mosley, but I could be wrong. But Mosley did get support from Pritzker. Gave him, a good deal of money, and he has been an operative for a while. But there have been some questions about his credentials, his education in particular. That paled in comparison to. I mean, he just had way more money than anybody else in the race. But I don't think that he was Howard Brookins' choice. So, outgoing Alderman Brookins, if I'm wrong, but I was going to say that kind of speaks again to the lack of power of endorsements. You look in the fourth ward where, Sophia King was really pushing for Prentice Butler, who had been, her chief of staff and had been chief of staff for the alderman that left before she was appointed to fill the seat. Right. And she kind of gave him a shot and he was very connected to the community. So, but he couldn't overcome the amount of money that was put into the race by the supporters of Lamont Robinson. So, an endorsement only goes so far, depending on who you are. I'm not even sure it's worth making.
Yeah, and Lamont Robinson, being a state representative, also in some ways had high name recognition, higher than a lot of other aldermanic challengers might. So that probably helped him as well. But then you have the 45th ward, where it doesn't seem to matter what the headlines are. Jim Gardner, did not let a couple of scandals hold him down. He won quite handily, despite accusations of intimidation of people who were critical of him and such. But the 45th ward basically stuck with its guy. What was that about, Erin?
I think we've discussed this before. It's like, well, we acknowledge he is under he's had all these legal issues and is being investigated, but he's our guy and we're sticking with him. It's still kind of surprising to me that he has won another 4 years after all of the,
just scandal. Just say it, a scandal.
And he's attacked constituents. He's attacked people who are supposed to be, voting for him and who he's supposed to represent. And I was, driving through the 45th ward just yesterday, and there are so many huge, massive signs with Jim Gardner's name on it. It's like, it's kind of eerie, the like fortress that people have built in their yards to say, Jim Gardner is our man. We are voting for him. That was surprising.
And I think it's one of those things that shows, though, that if you produce for your ward, your ward will produce for you. And that is, that is a case. And if you don't produce for your ward, as we've seen in some other past times where aldermen didn't, maybe it was constituent services, they won't stay by you no matter how popular you are. But one thing we can say, though, about this, there will be, we believe, more women on the city council than we've ever had at the same time. Pretty sure about that. Definitely sure we have more Latinas than we've ever had. And you'll see at least one or two become chairs of committees there. So it is a new city council, and we are out of time. So thank you both. That is Erin Hegarty of the Daily Line and political analyst for WBBM, Robin Robinson. I thank you both. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. And we'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, 105.9 WBBM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.